The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This is the Managing Madrid podcast.
Pressure back to Isco. Morata.
A brilliant goal! Absolutely the first. Spellbinding from Alvaro as he goes disco. Wonderful. When he takes his ball, finally, he has to defend us. Do you want to dance? Because I've got some moves here.
Casemiro stripped, played square. Jose Lu. Doni across, into the box, Jose Lu, through the legs, and he's done it! A brace in a minute, and Deportivo's in front!
This place is absolutely stupefied and shook as we see Jose Lu again, as cool as a bomb disposal expert here.
Heel has slid over to that left side. He was the hero a week ago from the corner, and it's buried again!
Sergio Ramos! Stario! Beautiful header to snatch this one away from brave Deportivo La Coruña! A goal is a dream with a deadline, and this one is a dream of dreams for the Madridistas!
Hello and welcome to the Managing Madrid podcast. This is your host, Kian Sobhani. I am joined by the same crew that covered the Clásico and was also our most downloaded podcast ever. So excited to be doing this again with my favorite optimist and my favorite tactical guru, Mike. How are you doing?
Good. Good to talk to you guys again.
Well, also joined by Om Arvind. Om, what's up, man? How are you doing?
I'm doing good. Glad to be on.
This is the burning question that I have that I want you guys to answer, and maybe Mike, we can start with you. Did Zidane get his squad selection right going into this match against Deportivo?
It's hard to say that he did, considering, you know, given the circumstances. And when I go down this rabbit hole of thought, because I was thinking about this, earlier today when I was watching the match back, I wonder how much the club values the Club World Cup, because that really seems like the only reason for benching so many vital starters and just like running out a really kind of arbitrary midfield and attack. If Ramos doesn't do Ramos things, we're having a completely different conversation, and the mood of this podcast is completely different, and we would be skewering Zidane for this decision. So I don't think he got it right, and he just kind of got bailed out. But I think it begs a bigger question of, like, maybe he was getting some pressure from the board and the club in general to be able to go make sure that his team is ready for the Club World Cup, because of just, I think, especially given that it's in Asia and it's a huge marketing opportunity for Madrid, I think that might be a thing. But in a vacuum versus Deportivo, I mean, Depor is a really really weak team. And full credit to them for their performance on Saturday. Like, they deserve so much more. But I could understand, you know, sending out a slightly weaker team. But the one that he did, it's hard to defend it. But, hey, 3 points are 3 points, right?
So I think, you know, just to digress for a second, I think Deportivo has shown enough in the last couple of weeks to show that they're not going to get relegated. They're probably going to stay afloat just above those 3 to 4 awful teams beneath them. Just to me, like, this squad selection was very Luis Enrique-esque in the sense that there was already so many key players missing in this match. So to go ahead and rest 3 more key players is just, I mean, I can understand resting them if you have like a healthy Bale. and it just seemed like it weakened the attack a bit too much, weakened the flow of the game to rest these guys on top of it. And not even just rest them, but omit them completely to the point where you can't even call them in the case of an emergency. So, I'm curious to know what your thoughts on this were as well. In terms of the squad selection, like, before we get into the tactics or anything, were you in agreement with the squad selection? Did you think it was risky? Do you think it's a bit overblown, that the way people are kind of talking about his squad selection? What did you think?
I pretty much completely agree with what Mike, you know, was saying. I still think we should have won the match a lot more comfortably. Deportivo wasn't actually that good. I think they had 4 shots. You know, they had a very low XG value, but I don't see the logic in leaving out the players that we did, because, first of all, the Club World Cup, you know, the teams we're going to face there are at a much, you know, they're much lower quality than any of the teams that we're ever going to face in La Liga. And I personally don't care about the Club World Cup at all. If we go there and lose, I don't care. It's a worthless trophy. It doesn't mean anything. We're already, you know, winning the Champions League, you know, means you're the best team in the world. You don't need to go and play against some sides outside of Europe to prove that. It's more or less just Real Madrid, you know, this philosophy we have. We have to be the best at everything. We have to get a bunch of trophies to prove it. I agree with Mike when he said there was probably pressure from the top, but I think it was totally unnecessary and kind of reckless, because, you know, the Club World Cup doesn't mean anything.
And for me, it's not so much the quality of players that Zidane sent out. I mean, I think the back line was, I mean, generally fine. Nacho, I think, has been having a surprisingly good season, arguably his best season yet. You know, Pepe and Danilo back there, 2 players who are getting back into form, and then obviously Ramos. That I don't really have so much an issue with. It's just that there's no... The midfield and attack is just, I didn't do the deep dive, but I would bet that those 6 players had not played together before in a match. At least if they have, you could probably count the amount of times they did play together on one hand. It just didn't make sense. Like, this is like these players, the player, it's not like he sent out like the Castilla team. It's just these are players that haven't played together. There was no clear philosophy or reasoning behind it. It was just sort of like, people are injured, I want to keep my guys healthy, let's send out what I got. So maybe he was right to do it. I don't know. Like I said, 3 points are 3 points, but it's hard to wrap my head around.
It certainly would be interesting to go back and see how many minutes these guys have actually played together. Certainly in this situation, it's a very unique situation where I don't know if there's any sample size where we had Morata up top with James Asensio Isco behind him. I could be incorrect, but I think we're safe in saying if there is any sample size at all of these 4 playing together or starting a match together, it's going to be tiny. So there was that lack of maybe familiarity. I don't know if, you know, how much that played into it. I'm also curious to know, I mean, on paper, this lineup actually looked kind of fun, did it not? I mean, you had 4 young players who everybody loves. They're exciting. I think the problem was like you said, Mikey, like not so much the talent level that was out there, but maybe the lack of versatility, because it was apparent to me that, you know, as this game unfolded, that these players playing behind Morata are all too similar. And what shocked me was that, you know, there wasn't enough versatility going forward, and you didn't really see that until Zidane made some substitutions. And to his credit, I think substitutions turned out really good. They were the right moves. They provided a bit more diversity in attack with Lucas. But is it surprising to you, Om, that with three players who generally are good going down the middle and can kind of play that 10 role if they're asked to, that there just wasn't any penetration down the middle? Does that surprise you at all?
It does. And before I get into that, I just want to like quickly touch on what you guys were saying and add that it's not so much the lineup, because this is a strong lineup. It's the message that Zidane sends when he leaves out a bunch of starters for the Club World Cup. That attitude spreads down to the rest of the team. You know, we were kind of lax until we conceded. We weren't really trying. You know, we weren't going 100%. We were still at first or second gear. So I think that was a problem. And then there was also some issues in tactics. I thought Zidane did a lot of things right, but the biggest problem was the way the attackers positioned themselves, that, you know, they weren't positioning themselves in between the lines. So James, Morata, Isco, and Asensio were all trying to run off the shoulders of the defense. And those sorts of runs are good, but that's what you need for a really direct style. And we had most of the ball for most of the game. And so what we needed was players to drop in between the midfield and the defensive line so as to occupy more than one player, keep the midfield pinned back, and receive the ball in the pockets. So that's what you need to penetrate the center when playing possession football. But since everyone was trying to run off the shoulders of the defenders, there were no options through the middle. So Kroos and Casemiro had no choice but to put the ball wide, because it wasn't realistic to be able to continually play these incredibly accurate through balls to find runners, running off the shoulders of the defenders. So that is something that is not unique to this game. I've seen this before, but usually when we have Ronaldo and Benzema, these players are more intelligent at playing in between the lines. But in this match, it was really prominent. I'm not sure why, because we had three number 10s on the pitch. So I think it was more of Zidane's tactics that had a role in this.
Yeah, I think, by the way, I completely agree with your statement about the message that it sends. I thought, like, if we were to kind of verbalize what it felt like, it was just too chill. It didn't give off good vibes in the sense of, like, was this really a game? And I don't think it was intentional. I think it was more subconsciously, like, okay, Zidane rested a bunch of players. We're off to Japan in a few days. This team is just above the relegation zone. Like, we just coast through this. That's literally what it seemed like. And I thought for large stretches of the first half, without Toni Kroos, I think this was shambolic. It was Kroos that was kind of pulling things together a bit, and it was his maturity, I think, that made it look like somewhat passable offensively. And it could have been a bit different. James missed a pretty good chance in the first half, but you know, I think if it wasn't for Kroos's brains, I think this would have looked a lot worse than it did in the first half. Go ahead.
To butt in. In Zidane's defense, like I said, Depor are not a very threatening team. Like I totally understand his, you know, if it was his logic, if this was his logic to send out a, you know, a kind of piecemeal lineup, because I wrote about it in the preview, they are like one of the worst road teams in La Liga. They had scored 5 goals in 8 matches on the road so far. Like they've just been hapless on the road. And to bleed 2 to them is another topic of conversation. But I think Deportivo, despite being poor, I think they're probably better than anybody that Madrid are going to see in the Club World Cup. So I don't know.
So my devil's advocate to that, Mike, is that, like, when I'm looking at the schedule, I think if if this is a normal part of the schedule, like not going into the winter break, I think absolutely this is like the one game you for sure rest at home to a bottom of the table La Liga dweller, even if they came off a big win. I don't know if that was sustainable for them, but I think you look at the schedule and you're like, the winter break is looming. Like right after the Club World Cup, we don't play until January. So isn't that just enough time for everyone to recoup anyway? Like,
yeah, totally. I agree. I mean, it seems like we're thinking the same thing, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I don't know. The Club World Cup is such a monkey wrench in terms of like trying to analyze decision making in this instance, because it's like, yeah, this is an awesome, you know, a home game against a weak side before a long and deserved winter break. And the Club World Cup, throw that in there, it makes it, you know, it makes that whole other wrinkle to it. But I agree. I think if this was any other part of the season, home against Depor, you can get away with it. But here it's like you have this trip against bad teams, but it's also traveling a lot. Players are injured. Yeah, yeah. Everything we've just discussed. I'm not really getting at anything. Let's move on.
I think it was the icing on the cake, Mikey. Can I just add something here? It's that, like, the semifinal game is played on the 15th. It's the time difference obviously also kills you. Like, for very selfish reasons, if you're trying to cover the game, it's at 6:30 in the morning here. I can't imagine if you're on the West Coast. Although the West Coast, you're probably just staying up the night before, and you know, you're watching the late game. But it's one of those things that, like, I'm just praying that we come out of this healthy. That's all I care about. I'm sure, and I said this in the reaction, I don't think anyone will remember if we win this tournament or not, like, 5 years down the road. I barely remember if we won the previous Club World Cups.
The reason I do is because all it basically does is put the crest on the next season's jersey, and I don't think it looks good. Like, I loved last year's kit, but I did not like having that Club World Cup champions like smack dab between the Adidas logo and the badge. So that's how I remember.
For pure aesthetic reasons, we should throw this game. We should throw this game to avoid that.
I would be for it.
So, Mike, you also briefly touched about the two goals conceded. I know you kind of dissected the goals we conceded in your tactical review. Do you want to walk us through it? Maybe we start with the first one, which to me kind of encapsulated who Casemiro is as a player. I thought he won the ball pretty brilliantly, to be honest. Retained possession, and then that was the extent to his contribution to that play, and then he just gifted Depor a goal. You walk us through that and tell it like a bit more eloquently than I just put it, please.
Right. So it kind of looks bad on Zidane when we have to win against Depor 3-2. But I think the problems with Zidane's tactics were all in offense in the final third. I thought defensively how he set us up and the way we were pressing, I thought it was really strong. And I think it's some of the best stuff we've seen defensively this season. It was just simply individual mistakes. I've been saying for a long time that Casemiro was weak under pressure. Opponents specifically look to press him because he's a weaker link in this side. We saw it versus Dortmund, and we saw it versus Depor. And it's just, you know, it's if Zidane wants to put all his faith in Casemiro as the single pivot defensive midfielder, or the only defensive midfielder in the squad, then these are the consequences he has to live with, because this is one of Casemiro's weaknesses. As for the second goal, that was just Sergio Ramos being Sergio Ramos. You could see how that lax mentality still existed in the squad, because Ramos just, he gave the pass away, and for half a second afterwards, it's like he couldn't even believe he'd given the pass away before he started running back. It was just two really bad individual mistakes that wasn't tactically Zidane's fault, but maybe can be put down on our lax mentality. But I would say this is 99% on the players on the pitch who made the mistake.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think, like, in the end, Zidane has control over certain things. He won't have control over a split-second decision that Casemiro makes there, which should have been much better than what transpired. What about the second goal? You did briefly mention about Ramos. Do you guys think that is it just apparent now that after X amount of years of Ramos being with the club and him going through like a maturation process and how inconsistent he was, and he's still not terribly consistent, is he basically just the type of player who you can count on big games and big moments, let's say, for scoring? But in terms of his defensive performance, we expect his best. I think at stage we see him consistently good in the bigger games. But against these smaller opponents, it just seems like his focus isn't there for 90 minutes. Mikey, like, do you have any like way to measure how Ramos plays from game to game? Like, do you think he steps up in bigger games and he's mentally not as sharp in these games?
I think that's a reasonable take per se. I don't have any glaring memories of him like completely screwing the pooch in a big game on the defensive end. I mean, of course, all my memories of Sergio Ramos now are pretty much him doing incredible things in the dying stages of important games, which he's made a career out of basically at this point. I think you're right. I think that's just kind of who he is. I think he's the type of defender that's willing to take some risks, willing to play some passes that or just, you know, play some angles that maybe aren't the best idea. I don't know, like that second on the, I'm watching it as we speak, the goal, Depor's second goal. I mean, that's like I don't think it's like the worst decision on his part to go in for the slide. I think he was just, you know, he was a step behind Yosulu and just kind of had to make a last ditch effort. Which I, you know, suppose can be traced back to him being out of position, because, I mean, he's not that much slower. I'm not even sure if I'm pronouncing his name right. Is it Joselu? Yosulu? I'm not...
Joselu.
Joselu. There we go. I was way off. I think that's just kind of who he is. And thankfully, it doesn't happen a ton. I think Ramos is a better defender than maybe a lot of people have realized in the last like few years, just because I think the common fan just knows him for the unbelievable goals and the crazy antics. But he's, you know, been a rock solid defender for quite some time now. Goes through runs of form the way everybody else does, but generally that's how he is. But I think that is a fair assessment that against these games that Madrid typically win comfortably, he's more prone to doing something just that's completely baffling.
Like, just to add a couple of things, I would agree and say that Sergio Ramos is a big game performer, but he also does play rather rashly in big games as well. The El Clasico last season, he got himself sent off when it was 1-1, and, you know, Ronaldo saved us that day. And in this match, it wasn't, I don't think anyone's criticizing him for like the way he tried to tackle the defender. It's the pass he gave away in the beginning that led to the attack, which was completely unnecessary. So Sergio Ramos is just an enigma to me. I tweeted that on the day that if Sergio Ramos didn't score, we'd all hate him. And I think that's a bit of an exaggeration, but I do think it kind of speaks to the fact that Ramos will take one step backwards and then another step forwards. It's almost like he'll make a mistake and then he'll do everything he can to erase that mistake. So and it kind of disappoints me, because in 2013-14, I thought that was the best Ramos we'd seen. I thought defensively he was pretty stable throughout the season, and it kind of looks like he's gone back to the old Ramos, which is disappointing, because the 5 or 6 times he has amazing games there, they're the best performances by any defender in the world. And I just wish he could get that consistency, but he is who he is at this point. And he's in the side for his leadership and his big game ability, and not necessarily for his focus on defense.
Yeah. 13-14, Ramos was a beast, like particularly towards the end of the season. I also want to note that, like, it's not necessarily unique to Real Madrid defenders in general to be this wildly inconsistent. I mean, if you go down the line, if you look at the team currently, I think, like, Pepe is kind of hot and cold the same way. Recently, I think he's been more consistent. Varane is the same way. He stepped up big games. I think maybe at least we can say, at least for the majority of our defensive line, they seem to show up in when it matters. But I mean, even if you go down the line in history, we've always been in this situation where, I don't know if it's because of the identity, the ideology, the formation, the tactics, world-class defenders just struggle to be consistent with Real Madrid. We went through a time where we signed the greatest defender on earth, who had just come off an incredible World Cup, in Fabio Cannavaro, and he looked really bad. I mean, for large stretches of the following season, Walter Samuel, the same thing. And I don't know if that's unique. There was, like, part of me thought at that time was, like, if we had signed prime Beckenbauer and Baresi, it would be the same thing. And I don't know if that's just because of the way Real Madrid plays, and they often leave their defenders in precarious situations. But I'm just used to it by now, and I can only expect so much from a Real Madrid defender. Mind you, I think it's better now than it has been. But I don't know if you guys feel that way too, or if we're just digressing too much there. But in terms of base, like, just measuring this by recent history, Ramos is okay in that sense.
Yeah, and I think you're right. And I think it's also true of, you know, even world-class defenders that don't play for Real Madrid, you know. And to get even more specific, I think it's just kind of center back position where you're on an island so often. And especially when you play in Europe and when you play in La Liga, it's like you're gonna face, you know, opposing attacks that can really come at you for 90 minutes. So, I mean, even people like Thiago Silva and, you know, Chiellini and, you know, Bonucci, all these, Vincent Kompany is a great example of just a brilliant center back who gets isolated and makes, you know, goes through runs of form. Some of the best players in the world at the center back position go through these motions. I can't really call to mind anybody in 2016, 2015, who's just been, like, flawless in terms of their form at the center back position. So I think it just might be kind of the nature of the beast sometimes.
I kind of agree with what you guys are saying, but also, I guess in that time when we got Cannavaro, correct me if I'm wrong, but this is when we lost Makalele and we had that really terrible central midfield in terms of defensive ability. I think if you look at Mourinho's time, bar 2012-13, and if you look at Ancelotti's time and Zidane's time, I think we've had pretty good systems that, yes, aren't as good defensively as, you know, some of the other teams, but that weren't exactly horrible either. That, you know, there are moments where Marcelo will, you know, completely abandon his defense. The two legs versus Roma is a good example, where Ramos actually stepped up in a really big way. But I'd say for the large part, 70 to 80% of the time, the likes of Ramos have played in a pretty good system since the second Florentino Perez era, and that he hasn't necessarily been exposed every single game. And he's just kind of, it's just kind of been down to his rashness that a lot of these mistakes have happened. Pepe is a good example of, you know, how you can be consistent aside, because ever since the 13-14 season, all the way up to last season, he's easily been our best defender, and he has been consistent on, he's been extremely consistent, and he's been playing in the exact same system as Ramos, obviously. So I do think at times Ramos can be the victim of his circumstances, but I also do think that it is his own personal tendencies that leads to these mistakes.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Champions League draw and take some of your questions on Twitter. This is the Managing Madrid podcast on managingmadrid.com.
Oh, oh, oh.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Managing Madrid podcast. This is your host, Kian Sobhani. I am joined by Mike Cortegna and Omar Vind. And I think, you know, I think the next course of discussion, fellas, is to talk about the Champions League draw. We can go at it, gloves off, because apparently there's a lot of controversy over this, which I have learned the hard way after I wrote my article about Arsenal. The premise was that Arsenal is our most difficult opponent, and I think many people didn't like that idea. So we can go at it a bit if you want. We can talk about it. I'm curious to know, like, maybe we can start with you, Mike. If you were to rank, and by the way, like, by the time people listen to this tomorrow, we may already know our opponent. So it'll be interesting to look on this on our midweek pod and discuss it at length. But if you're looking at the teams available, Mike, do you have a ranking of who you would rather face and who you would rather avoid? Like from your least favorable to your most favorable matchup, who would you go with?
Oh man, this is tough. I was not prepared for this. I think I totally agree about Arsenal. I think Arsenal are a complete enigma. I rather like following them because they are just so dramatic. Their ability to just absolutely destroy their fans' hopes and then build them back up within like a week span is truly amazing. It's unlike anything I've ever seen. I think their ceiling is really high. I would not want to face Arsenal. Arsenal on their best day would be terrifying. But that said, they're also the kind of team that can self-destruct on a moment's notice, as we've seen repeatedly for the last half of a decade plus. I think Juventus is also another team that you want to avoid. I don't think they're as good as they've been the last few seasons, but I still wouldn't want to face them this early. And so Barcelona and Atleti are out of the picture, correct? Because they cannot play another Spanish team until the quarters. I would want... I don't know. This is tough. Like, Leicester? All of a sudden, Leicester's scoring goals like crazy. That might say, you know, more about... I might say more about the state of Man City right now than Leicester. But still, I think they're another team that has a really high ceiling. I would prefer Napoli or Monaco. That's what I'm rooting for. I think, you know, not to say anything poor about, like, I don't really, like, truthfully, I haven't watched a ton of either of them this year. I don't think they're necessarily poor teams. I mean, they won their group in the Champions League, for heaven's sake, but I just think they might be a class below Real Madrid. And that's certainly the two teams I'm going to be pulling for.
I'm almost certain that if we drew Napoli, Callejon would for sure score against us.
Oh, no doubt about it.
In just the classic way that ex-Madrid players do.
Oh, yeah. And if we draw Juve again, then you can bet your ass that Higuain's going to find the net. Just, especially, you know, in the manner in which he went out of Madrid, there's just no way he wouldn't.
There's part of me that thinks that Higuain's knack for missing goals in big games cancels that out. Maybe that's what stops the curse, is like Higuain's just going to miss big games.
That's a fair point.
Obviously, that's a dangerous thing to say. If he scores us and torches us, then I take it back. I don't want that karma on me right now. But we all know that you think Arsenal is some relegation team, and Ozil is the worst goal scorer that's ever played the game. Do you want to elaborate on that?
I don't know where any of that is coming from, but I personally think Juventus is the toughest draw because of the way we'll match up stylistically and also because of how things will be or should be come time for the round of 16. So first I'll start with Juventus. They play with the back three. They pack the midfield with three center midfielders and, you know, two wide midfielders who also act as wing backs. They're physically superior to our midfield. We're basically a lightweight midfield, and I feel like if we play them, it could be a lot like 2014-15 versus Juventus, where we had a good chance to win, but I also felt when it came down to it, tactically we were outmatched. I just think the way Juventus play and the way they set themselves up just doesn't, especially against Zidane's Madrid, where we might have to possess the ball a bit more and look to break that side down or battle in midfield, I don't think we'd match up as well. When it comes to Arsenal, they're going to want to possess the ball. They're going to want to impose their style in the game. And if there's anything Zidane has proved so far, it's he performs his best tactically against those kinds of sides, you know, having us sit back and be really organized and hit them on the break. So I would much rather prefer Juventus that way. And as for Ozil, essentially just what I'm saying is I don't think he's a bad goal scorer. I just don't think that his current goal-scoring run is sustainable. I just think it's a purple streak, mainly because he's taking under 2 shots per 90 minutes, and it's just statistically not sustainable to just keep that insane conversion rate up. And my third point is, come the round of 16, all the English sides will have gone through an arduous winter schedule because they don't have a winter break. So I feel like Arsenal will be extremely tired and worn out, like English teams have proven to be every single year when we come to face them in the round of 16. That being said, Arsenal are still a very dangerous team. They're not a team I want to face. I would much rather prefer to have Leicester or Napoli. I'm not really that confident about Monaco as of now, even though I think Arsenal and Juventus are more dangerous because Monaco's second in the league ahead of PSG and 1 point off the top away from Nice. So I definitely think Napoli or Leicester would be the ideal draw.
You know, I'm just busting your balls about the Ozil thing. I know you don't actually feel that way, but you know, I'm also going to let you know every time he does score. I don't know how sustainable his goal scoring form is. I know that he's been insanely good this season. The way I look at it is I think that pound for pound, Arsenal have been better than Juve this season. But I think the point you make, which is important to make, is that is that going to hold ground tactically? Because to me, Zidane is better when Real Madrid don't have the ball in that situation where they can just burst forward. Juve will never in a million years allow us to do that. And breaking down a back three with the width of those wingers is insanely difficult. And we know that also, not only from previous matchups with Juve, but also, you know, just looking at Italy in the World Cup and Spain insanely labored trying to break them down. It's not an easy thing to play against.
Yeah, I think Ohm's point is really valid about the matchup. I'm looking at the Serie A table and I'm looking at La Liga table right now. Madrid and Juve are kind of similar in terms of goal difference and, you know, goals conceded. They've each conceded 14 goals. And for some reason that feels like a gigantic amount for Madrid and it seems like a small amount for Juve. But I just think though, yeah, the back three and the five midfield players, that could spell trouble. I think in the Champions League especially, if you're a Madrid fan, you want an opponent who I think it's better for Madrid to have an opponent against whom they could end up in a shootout versus a opponent who they'll struggle to break down the door against. I think Juve is that kind of team where they have shown that they can really bring the defensive level up in Europe, and I just think that could be a really tough matchup for Madrid, whereas Arsenal, that would just be, I mean, as a observer, that could be thrilling football. You know, 4 or 5 goal games, you know, things of that ilk. But I think the matchup is definitely something to consider, especially with Juve.
All right, but let's be serious, guys. We all know Florentino Perez has paid off all the UEFA officials, and there's no way we're getting Arsenal and Juve, and we're going to get either Leicester or Napoli. So talking about this is kind of pointless because, you know, Perez has got this all sorted out already.
There was a lot of bad karma going on in this podcast right now.
I was gonna say, by the time people,
Higuain is gonna knock us out.
By the time people listen to this, it'll probably have already happened. So maybe we'll look the fools.
So I think I don't think we should go. We're almost at, like, I don't know. We're at 50 minutes here. We don't want to go too much longer. But I think based on, like, our discussion, and yes, Juve would be a tougher matchup in that sense, in the tactical point of view. I also, like, would just caution the idea of that going against, you know, toe-to-toe with Arsenal in a shootout and I can score more than you attitude is also, like, the last time we did that against Arsenal, they knocked us right out of the park. And they, you know, Henry scored in the first leg, and then the 0-0 in the second leg was probably one of the most entertaining second 0-0s I've ever seen in my life. But it just didn't work then. And I'm not saying that you should apply that 7 years later, but I'm just saying this is, like, the danger about, you know, because Arsenal are not just a team that's good in attack. Their defense is sound, but they're also not. They're also, like, way better than, like, your average attacking team. They're pretty ruthless and clinical and lethal, and their transition and their build-up, everything is good, and they can play a counter-attacking game if they wanted to. I mean, we saw that against Barca last season. So, you know, just, I think either or, there's not going to be an easy way here. Either way, it's going to be difficult. Like, even, like, we look at Leicester, and, you know, I'm not too fond of facing those set pieces from Mahrez, to be honest. I'm not saying that he puts us out of the competition with those, but, you know, those are all danger points that Leicester have. It's also interesting to note, if you're, like, an Arsenal fan and you're looking at this coming first, like, three of their potential opponents are Real Madrid, Bayern Munich, and Sevilla, which, to me, it's like, what is leaving the point of coming first? Those are some, like... it's just really interesting the way the Champions League is lined up this season. Do you guys have anything else to add on the draw tomorrow, or do you want to move on to some questions?
I don't really have anything more to say.
Okay.
Yeah, so, like I said,
we're going to play by ear. Yeah, Mikey, sorry, I cut you off there.
I was just going to say, yeah, it'll be old news by the time most people listen to this, so hopefully we covered something pertinent for all that.
So we have a few questions on Twitter. The first question is from, I'm interested to get your thoughts on this, Om. It's from @nowonder_woman. She just says no.
And that's been the show. Thanks for listening. No questions today because @nowonderwoman.
Is there something, do you think, like... philosophical behind this? Like, are we supposed to dissect this a bit, or?
She's just saying she doesn't like our pod. I mean, I don't know how much we should, you know, take that at face value, considering the last one was our most downloaded one, but at least we're getting all types of feedback here.
At first I thought that, like, maybe it was, this account was, like, one of those bots that, like, automatically responds to certain types of questions, because it's like, it's @nowonderwoman. So maybe it's like just a bot that just, like, anytime it detects a question mark, it just responds and says no. But it seems to be a real person, for better or for worse.
Well I hope, No Wonder Woman, that we've converted you into a listener after this.
I was gonna say,
yeah.
If they've made it, you know, like 45 minutes, 50 minutes into this pod, then, you know, maybe they'll be vindicated. Maybe they'll never listen to us and never hear the shout out, but that's their mistake.
Full disclosure, I think this is probably, like, some of the one of the worst crop of questions we've received. There's, like, another one that asks Messi or Ronaldo. But
I don't see this where...
You just got to hit refresh, my friend. But at any rate, there's a question from a patron, which we take very seriously. Naz Habib, long-time patron. We appreciate your support, man. Naz asks, big shout out to Naz. Naz asks, is Sergio Ramos even a real person? No, seriously. You know what? Like, we've made it how long into this podcast, and we didn't really talk about that goal that Ramos scored.
Yeah, I was going to mention that earlier. Maybe it's just because it's been a day or so since, and we've kind of come down, but good gracious. Like, who is this guy? I want to read every profile on Sergio Ramos ever written. Like, I want a deep dive into, like, the mind and the daily life of Sergio Ramos, because he's just the kind of player and kind of person that just kind of cracks me up, just being the way that he is. Like, he's just so absurd that I'm fascinated by him. But I saw, you know, another shout out to Lucas Navarrete, our editor, that he saved like 5 points by himself for Madrid in 7 days. Like, single-handedly got the draw against Barca, single-handedly won this game. Sergio Ramos is amazing, and I'm so happy he's our captain, and I love him, and I want to know everything there is to know about him. I digress.
Anything to add about Sergio? King Sergio?
All I'm going to say is that he's the most clutch player in sports history. He's just scored these kinds of goals so many times that, you know, we should all just build an idol in front of the Bernabeu and just worship that idol, because he's just insane. At this point, he's just trolling all of us. He can score at any point, but he just needs to do it at the 90th minute, because that makes things more interesting. So I don't even know what to say about this guy anymore. He's just insane.
I mean, when it happened, I was more in shock than in the celebration mode. I was like, seriously, the way Real Madrid came back and won this game was surreal. When you go back and watch it, like, after the game and actually watch the replay and to just kind of dissect it, it was really a tremendous header. Like, beyond the fact that it was a game winner, the header itself, like, just the pure athleticism that he has. And it's the 90th minute, the game is on the line. You just know that he's the one that really you need to mark out of the game. And, like, both this goal and the one against Barca, just, like, it doesn't matter how many people know that in the stadium. He just finds a way, and he's unmarked in it. And it's just crazy to me. You think by now coaches, like, would start practicing, like, defending Sergio Ramos the 90th minute. Like, this is, like, something they have to prepare for. But still, he just comes up and he gets to the ball. It's just pure will.
Yeah, I just quickly like to digress and give some plaudits to Mariano, because without his goal, we wouldn't be talking about the Sergio Ramos winner. And I think he's barely played, but I think he's been impressive so far. And I think he's done everything a third striker can do this season. Mm-hmm. He took his chance in the Copa del Rey, and he came on here, and he proved that he is the bench player, the super sub that we thought he would be when we were talking about him last season. So, you know, I just like to praise him, because without him, we wouldn't have won that game as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%. Keon, do you remember in the spring when I was kind of banging the drum that Mariano should be the second stringer behind Benzema, because I wasn't totally sold that Morata would be brought back? And my reasoning for that was basically, like, Mariano's, you know, not the most technically able striker. I mean, as far as, you know, Real Madrid caliber strikers go, but he is a man-child. He's such an athletic freak, and I think Ohm's right. I think his goal to, like, make that kind of awkward jump and head that in is just, like Mariano embodied. Like, I think that is not the kind of goal that I see Morata or Benzema scoring, because he's just such a freak beast and can make that kind of leap in that moment. So, yeah, I love Mariano. I'm such a fan. I you know, for him, I was kind of bummed at first this season that he was just going to be, I thought he was just going to be wasting away on the bench, but it is exciting to see him get minutes in these instances. And to go back to Ramos, kind of lost in all of the narrative, like so much narrative about him in the late stages of games. He's been a great aerial, threat for his whole career, pretty much. I mean, it obviously hasn't been until the last couple of years that he's been scoring these huge goals in these instances. But this is a facet of his game that's not necessarily new. It's just the timing that is new. And boy, is it a lot of fun to watch it unfold seemingly every week now. So again, I love Sergio Ramos. I want to know everything there is to know about him in terms of his daily rituals and whether he goes to sleep and whether he eats human food and things like that, because I'm not sure that he does.
I feel like, Mike, if we don't like interrupt you and we just let you keep going, you're going to say something like not safe for work about Sergio Ramos.
We're going down the rabbit hole of fan fiction. Gonna hang up the pod and go write my Sergio Ramos fanfic.
We would love to read that, but maybe not publicly. I'll add my...
No comment.
I'll add my 2 cents on Mariano too. I'm just really happy for him in a way. It kind of just warms my heart because I felt bad for him, because I think he's talented enough to start for a lot of teams in La Liga who would be thrilled to have him on the roster. So good for him. I'm happy for him. I didn't want him to rot away. I wanted him to get as many minutes as possible, and he's certainly good enough to play in La Liga. He's just unfortunately also in a team that has two great strikers ahead of him. There's a question from Hala Madrid at CBF_Venom. Going forward, who would you guys like as a starter over Casemiro? In my opinion, his ineptitude on the ball will be his downfall in Real Madrid.
We've kind of discussed this to death, haven't we?
Yeah, I don't know if there's a single podcast that this doesn't come up.
I can't go a single podcast without, not trashing, but speaking out against Casemiro. I'm like contractually obligated at this point, but I didn't think he was too bad in this game. But to answer the question really directly, and this is something I've stumped for a while, is I believe in Kovacic. I think a midfield three of Kroos, Kovacic, and Modric could just be something special. And I'm just such a huge fan of Kovacic.
Yeah, and the question also says, going forward, who would you guys like as a starter? I'm not sure if he means going forward as in, from starting from next match day, or if he means next season, but as is always the case when a question like this comes up, I just kind of throw Llorente stats out there for the respective match day. And this morning, I didn't get a chance to watch it. I woke up at the crack of dawn to watch Castilla. And Alaves were playing at the same time. I don't know why La Liga has these crazy early morning games, but it drives me nuts on a Sunday morning. But Marcos Llorente, he had 6 interceptions and 5 successful tackles, and that's like just routine for him. It's like another day at the office for him. So next season, I mean, I don't know. There's a lot of players that Real Madrid are linked with. I hope Llorente is seriously considered for the position. Anything to add on?
Yeah, I just agree with that. Going forward, like, everyone knows my opinion by now on my opinion on Casemiro this season. Going forward, as in next season, I would let Llorente compete for that starting spot, because I think he can win it, because I think he does what Casemiro does. I don't think they're the same types of players in the way they defend, but the numbers they rack up are pretty similar, and they're both prolific, and I think he's much, much better in the ball, and I think a lot of Casemiro fans agree with that. So next season I'd have Llorente starting, and I have a lot of faith that he can fulfill the starting duty as a defensive midfielder for this club.
I think from what I've seen from even the biggest Casemiro fans out there is that they all seem to be open to Llorente, which is nice.
Because he's a Castilla graduate, basically.
Yeah, I think he has that about him that people will gravitate to. We'll take one more question. And it's from John Fernandez. He asks, without being the turd in the punch bowl, Kaler's looked slightly less than his spectacular self this season. No. Is Kaler the elephant in the room right now? I don't know. I think it's maybe harsh to label him as that, but there is concern over his performances if you compare it to last season. What do you guys think?
I don't necessarily think so. I think he certainly has been less surreal than he was last season. Not to say that last season was kind of him like playing out of his mind. I when you look at the goals in a vacuum, against Barcelona, Suarez pushed off of Vasquez pretty extravagantly, and Naves couldn't do a whole lot about it. Joselu's goal, the first goal, was just an absolute wonder strike. I paired with a really bad gaffe on the defensive end. The second goal, maybe Kaler makes that save last year, but I haven't seen anything from Kaler that has me like concerned. Like, I don't think he's part of the problems, insofar that a team can have problems when they're unbeaten through December. But I don't know. Maybe I'm just too much of a Kaler fanboy that I refuse to criticize him because I love him so much. But I agree that he hasn't been as good as he was last season, but I still think he's been pretty damn solid.
Yeah, I mostly agree with Mike saying. I mean, when he started off in the beginning of the season, when he's coming back from injuries, he did have two or three games where he did make mistakes that cost us. I think the first Dortmund game away to Dortmund was the last time he kind of made any sort of big mistake. And I think since then, he's been pretty consistent and he's been pretty good. I don't think it's quite reached the level of last season where he was essentially our best player under the Benitez era. But that I kind of feel like that's kind of a once-in-a-season kind of performance anyway. I think since that away Dortmund game, Navas has got back to being more or less his best self. What I'm actually more concerned about is Kaler's distribution. Because now that Zidane went trying to break up a press or play against a press, he splits the center backs wide and has Kroos drop deep to receive. I feel like Navas is not that comfortable with his feet and that he kind of loses his composure and looks to punt it long when really he's always got an option that overloads the press that he should use 99% of the time. So I don't know if that's really just Zidane hasn't really trained him enough at this point to do that, or it's just him not being that comfortable on the ball. But that concerns me more than his ability to save shots, which I think at this point he's got back to his best.
Yeah, and I think I guess it's important to note, obviously, the more important thing that we ask of him is his reflexes and his ability to save shots, and his distribution, if it needs work, comes secondary, obviously. I have like similar concerns to you. His distribution could be a bit better. It's also not disastrous. This is a kind of a weird example, but I was watching the Man U game today against Spurs, and Mourinho just knows that his backline is not going to be really good at passing his way out of a press, so they just hit long balls. And like that's kind of like what you resort to in a situation where you're not confident to distribute it. And I don't think that's a huge detriment to the team if Kaler just hoofs it, for example. But it's also interesting to note that I had all this in my mind, and then I look at his passing dashboard for this game, and he actually made 12 out of 13 successful passes. Which actually was quite unexpected when I just saw it right now when I pulled it up.
When I criticize him, it's not necessarily because he was missing the passes. I just think like in the future when we face tougher teams, it'll hurt us. But anyway, sorry for interrupting you there.
No, I'm not sure I was going anywhere else with that, but I guess I'll just add that I think Navas has been good this season. Yeah, he hasn't been his you know, what we saw from him last season, but given that he's coming off a surgery and it's taking him time to get back into it, I think he's looked fine. And above all, like, he's one of those guys I irrationally support no matter what, because he's just such a likable guy. I don't like, just like, he's just like such a cool character to have on the team. Mike, do you kind of see it the same way? I don't know. I just like, I think Kaylor is like part of my list of just people I adore in this team.
Yeah, 100%. I love him, and I think that sounded way too serious. I'm a huge fan. I think this is a really interesting discussion, one that I'm not qualified to necessarily drive, because I don't know how that kind of analysis works. In terms of like goalkeepers who are, you know, excellent because they're good distributors versus goalkeepers who are excellent shot stoppers, and you know, which kind of goalkeeper you want given the league that you play in. I think the modern example is the whole Joe Hart fiasco, which at the moment not working out too well for Man City, where he was effectively shipped out of town because while he was an excellent shot stopper, he's not a great distributor. But, you know, I don't know if that's just like a wrinkle of Guardiola's system versus, you know, I think in La Liga, you're going to see shots like José Luis, where they just belt, players aren't afraid to just belt it from outside the box and try and make something out of nothing. And, you know, that's where it helps to have a great shot stopper. I don't, if anybody listening has like any, has read anything or seen anything that's particularly gripping about this, you know, the different types of goalkeepers and stuff like that, please leave it. Because it's definitely something I'm interested in.
I think we just plowed through all of our questions. We've hit the hour mark, and tomorrow is the Champions League draw, and Lucas will have coverage of that per usual. He's also, apparently according to reports and according to some sources, that announced that Ronaldo will be announced as the Ballon d'Or winner tomorrow. Any thoughts on that, gentlemen?
I know that there's a lot of controversy about this, and I know there's like, I personally know people who don't think Ronaldo deserves it, but I think looking at everything he's done in 2016, the trophies he's won, how he's contributed crucially in key games like the Wolfsburg game, like versus Wales and Hungary in the Euros, and the leadership he's displayed across all of that, I think 100% he deserves to be named the best player of 2016.
We just lost Mikey for a bit. I'm not sure what happened, but I'll give my Ronaldo answer until we get him back. I think I'm with you. I was ready to give this trophy to Ronaldo right after the Euros ended. And to me, it didn't matter what happened after that. I think he did enough in the Champions League to put the team on his back and put his country on his back, win his first ever international tournament. I think he had done enough at that point to just win it there. So I think maybe like the people who are in disagreement with this is they have a bit of recency bias in their memory, where they look at this club campaign 2016 and probably take that into account, where, you know, which is kind of natural to do, but certainly he does deserve it.
Yeah, and to be fair to the people who are arguing against Ronaldo, like, it's not like it's clear cut, you know, Ronaldo just absolutely deserves this. Messi has the most goals and assists in the 2016 calendar year, and arguably Suarez was the best player for Barcelona 2015-16 season, because after they lost the Clásico, he just put the team on his back and scored a ridiculous number of goals. But I think it has to come down to performance in the big moments that separates what makes a great season. And when it came down to it, it's just my opinion, Messi did not perform in the big games. In El Clasico, he just was non-existent. In Copa America final, he was bad. He got booked for diving. He missed the penalty. Suarez hasn't been great coming into this season. I think compared to the stuff that Messi and Ronaldo did, it doesn't match up. Griezmann, he lost both the biggest finals in Europe. So when it comes down to it, I think Ronaldo performed better in the big moments, and I think that's what separates him slightly from the rest.
Do we Can you guys Mike hear back? Me?
Yeah, okay, Mikey, you're back now. We don't know what happened to you.
I don't know. I think my internet crapped out for a moment in time. But I agree with everything you just said. My point earlier was, before I cut out, was that I think the voters, based on the past precedent they've set where they value trophies won very highly, I think that makes Ronaldo more or less a lock to win this. And I really liked how matter-of-factly, how you just said, oh, well, you know, Griezmann lost the two biggest finals in Europe, so that's that.
Hey, there's no way. There's no way he's winning it. We all know.
I know, but just the way you said that cracked me up.
There was an interview.
Yeah, I don't think... Yeah, yeah, no, it didn't sound like you meant for that to be a dig at Griezmann. He's had an outstanding year, but tough break.
There was an interview he was having. I don't remember where it was. I saw it on Twitter where, like, someone asked him, like, who do you not want to see in 2017 or something like that? And Griezmann said Cristiano Ronaldo. It's been a kind of a nightmare whenever he's had to face Ronaldo this season in three instances, the two European finals, and then this season in the Madrileño derby. So it's not been good for Griezmann when coming up against Real Madrid and Portugal.
Before we wrap this up, we let all our listeners go too. We just wanted to make a quick plug. Sam Sharp and I will be adding an additional weekly podcast, just to update you guys on the loanees, the players on loan, and also Castilla. Probably be about brief 15 to 20 minute pod, just to give you guys some updates on what's going on there, because there's been a lot of demand for it. So please stay tuned for that. And if you enjoy this podcast and you haven't rated us already, please, please do so. Helps us be more visible on iTunes, and also rate us and subscribe. Just one more thing before we let you go. Patreon.com/ManageMadrid. You can find out more about sponsoring our podcast and pledging. And it's really cool. You can get different rewards based on how much you pledge. So from myself, Kian Sobhani, and Mike Platania and Omar Vin, we thank you guys for listening. And Hala Madrid.
Hala Madrid. Hala Madrid.
The future is a hefty responsibility, and not one that we take lightly. But then, taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.